Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just 15 bucks a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. Hello, I'm Oliver Conway, and this edition is published in the early hours of Sunday, the 23rd of June. Less than a week before Iran's presidential election, the Supreme Court overturns a death sentence given to a popular rapper. Hamas says Israeli airstrikes on residential areas in northern Gaza killed 38 people. Israel says it was targeting Hamas. And Greek police arrest 13 people in connection with a wildfire thought to have been caused by fireworks from a yacht. Also in the podcast...
Wild Thing was a fan favourite, and the fact that he had been competing for 5 times, and, you know, he deserved to win. So.
Crowning the world's ugliest dog. But first, Toomaj Salehi is an Iranian rapper known for his songs about social issues and government policies. Two months ago, he was sentenced to death. He had angered the clerical regime by backing the protests over the death in police custody of Mahsa Amini. But with the Iranian presidential election now less than a week away, the Supreme Court there has overturned the sentence and ordered a retrial. I heard more about Toomaj Salehi from Kazra Naji of the BBC Persian Service.
He supported the wave of protests in Iran in 2022, the protests that came under the title of Woman, Life, Freedom. And he vocally and loudly supported that. He joined the protests and he started singing these very political protest songs in support of that movement and also in support of fight against inequalities, about injustice, about suppression of women. He was very vocal and very political about that. Obviously, the Iranian authorities didn't like that. It's all those things that Iranian clerics despise. And it happened at the time of very sensitive time in Iran and huge amount of protests in Iran. So they raided his house and they arrested him. Soon afterwards, there was a video on one of the pro-government websites that showed him having been beaten in a dark corner on the floor with blindfold on and saying things that wasn't very clear, but according to those websites, he was confessing that he had done something wrong.
Now, Iran is not scared of executing its prisoners. Why do you think they've moved now to overturn the death sentence and order a retrial?
We don't know, basically. The timing is interesting. We're just 6 days away from Iran's presidential elections. Maybe they thought by commuting that sentence for the time being, they can entice more people to come to the polls because there's widespread discontent in Iran and there are many people who say they don't want to go and vote and they're boycotting the elections. So it would help maybe to entice more people to come and vote. But also maybe they decided that if they were going to execute this man, there could be a backlash at the time of elections. Not a good idea.
But do you think in the retrial he'll be found guilty again and face execution later?
I don't know, because, and it's Iranian judiciary, it's very unpredictable what they do, and it's what they do is very political too. It depends on the political situation on the day, on the week, on the year, and which forces are on top at the time in Iran and in Iran's judiciary. So we just have to wait and see.
Khazra Naji of the BBC Persian Service. The EU Foreign Affairs Chief Josep Borrell has called for an independent investigation after at least 22 people died in explosions near the Red Cross office in Gaza on Friday. Israel is reviewing the incident but says there's no indication that it carried out a strike there. William Schomburg, head of the ICRC delegation in Gaza, spoke to the BBC from the scene.
I'm running out of adjectives to describe just how painful it was. There were several extremely loud explosions very close to where we are located. We are talking really just a few meters away from us. Several dead and wounded directly in front of our office, which was also partially damaged by the impact of these blasts. You know, going on 9 months of war, it's an extremely difficult situation for anybody to process, I think, particularly for our Palestinian colleagues and civilians within Gaza who have borne the brunt of this conflict. The burden of this conflict is too great for too many.
William Schomburg of the Red Cross. Well, a day after that incident in the southern coastal area of Al-Mawasi, more Palestinians were killed in northern Gaza. Hamas says at least 38 people died in Israeli airstrikes in Gaza City on Saturday. Israel said it hit two Hamas sites there. Video shows plumes of smoke and flattened buildings in the Al-Shati refugee camp. Hussein Muhaisen is a civil defence spokesman.
The whole area was targeted. It was like an earthquake. Homes were destroyed. There are still families under the rubble. Some of the injured were transferred to the Baptist Hospital, and now we are rescuing others from under the rubble. The situation is very, very difficult due to the lack of tools and fuel for ambulances.
I heard more from our correspondent in Jerusalem, Yoland Nell.
There have been a number of neighbourhoods hit in Gaza City, most notably the Shati or Beach camp, one of the eight urban refugee camps in Gaza. And you can see in some of the footage that's being shared on social media, you know, the immediate aftermath. These were large strikes, several strikes, witnesses said, where, you know, there are dozens of people rushing out to search for victims in the street. You can see a lot of destruction there, homes completely flattened, walls blasted apart, a lot of debris filling up the street, and people rushing some of the wounded away on stretchers and carrying a small boy, his face covered in dust, the wounded being rushed to the hospital. There are dozens of wounded as well as those killed, we're told. And there were also these strikes that took place in the Tufah neighbourhood of Gaza City, where the Israeli military has only said that it was targeting Hamas infrastructure. It put out quite a brief statement saying that more details would follow later. And there's been some speculation in the Israeli media that this was a senior commander in Hamas who was being targeted, that the head of the military wing of Hamas in Gaza City, an attempt to kill him. And really, it's just added to the sense that fighting is picking up again in Gaza. We're hearing of other strikes in Al-Shaja'iyyah and in the Zaytun neighbourhood. These are neighbourhoods that have been repeatedly targeted by Israeli forces and where they say they have gone back as they've seen Hamas regrouping.
Yoland Nell in Jerusalem. Meanwhile, the UN chief Antonio Guterres has warned that escalating tensions on Israel's northern border could trigger a catastrophe and turn Lebanon into, quote, another Gaza. All-out conflict has been threatening to erupt there since the Lebanese militant group Hezbollah began firing missiles into northern Israel following the October the 7th massacre, prompting tit-for-tat responses from Israel. Lucy Williamson reports from northern Israel.
It's problem in his... David Kamari's neighbours are long gone. The roofs of their houses smashed by shrapnel from Hezbollah rockets. David has stayed on in the largely deserted border town of Kiryat Shmona. Even now, weeks after a rocket hit his front garden, cracking his house in several places.
Every day, every night, bomb, problem. And I born here. What I say?
Rockets hit Kiryat Shmona every week. One slipped past Israel's defences days ago, hitting a street outside the mayor's office.
And hit here.
Yeah, hit and there and there and one there.
The US is pushing hard for a diplomatic solution here. But the mayor, Avichai Stern, says full-scale war is the only way out.
Sitting here like lambs to slaughter, just waiting for the day they attack us like we saw in the south, it's unacceptable. And everyone understands the choice is between war now or war later. I don't think there is any country in the world that would accept daily fire against its citizens.
Israeli strikes into southern Lebanon have displaced more than 90,000 people on the Lebanese side of the border. But some have stayed, saying it's better to die at home with dignity than be driven out of their land like the Palestinians. Fear of all-out war extends as far as the capital, Beirut, where some say they keep suitcases packed and passports ready in case full-scale war breaks out.
Of course we don't want to go to war with Israel, but if that's solidarity with the people in Gaza, so be it.
I went to the south a few days ago. You wonder if the highway will get hit on the way back. But am I going to stop for everything? Life doesn't stop.
Of course, everyone is afraid. And those who tell you they are not are lying to themselves.
Hezbollah is a well-trained, well-armed military backed by Iran. Its leader, Hassan Nasrallah, has threatened to invade Israel if full-scale war breaks out and says nowhere in the country will be spared. But Israel has been talking up its readiness to take them on. Tough talk is part of both sides' strategy of deterrence, but the line between deterrence and decision on a war is becoming harder to see. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is facing growing demands at home for a ceasefire in Gaza.
We want Hamas gone, we want the hostages gone, and we want to feel safe in our country.
That would help calm tensions in the north too. But Mr. Netanyahu is keeping both conflicts going, mortgaged by his promise to far-right government allies to destroy Hamas before ending the Gaza war. Playing for time is his specialty. But the longer this conflict goes on, the more it turns into playing with fire.
A report by Lucy Williamson. Until 1953, Greenland was a colony of Denmark before becoming a formal part of the kingdom. But relations have been soured by recent revelations of misconduct on the vast island by the Danish authorities in the 20th century. Now, four people who were born in Greenland but adopted by Danish parents have claimed that those adoptions were illegal and are seeking compensation. More details from Stephanie Zacherson.
The four people say that their biological families weren't made aware of exactly what was happening to them, the then children, when they were adopted by Danish families and taken from Greenland. One of them is Marietta Johansson. She was barely 6 months old when she was adopted in 1951. She says her biological mother didn't understand what she was being told, that she only thought her daughter would be receiving foster care for a period of time. Instead, Margrethe was moved to Denmark and grew up there.
When that happened, I was taken from my mother, my family, my language, my culture, my name. They took literally everything and sent me away from the life I was supposed to have.
It took Margrethe 40 years to find and reconnect with her birth mother. By then, they were not only separated by time, but by speaking different languages. After researching her own history and the history of adoptions between Greenland and Denmark, Margrethe says that there was a certain power dynamic where Greenlandic women weren't listened to by the Danish authorities. The lawyer Mats Bramming has brought this case and the demands for compensation to the Danish government. He says there's no doubt that the authorities were aware of these adoptions being handled incorrectly.
The most basic requirement for an adoption is that the people who are giving up their child want to give up their child, that there's consent from both families, and the state has to make sure that everything's done accordingly. But when you look closer at these cases, it's apparent that Danish couples came to Greenland with the single purpose of bringing a child home, and the authorities seem to have looked the other way.
The adopted people are each asking for the equivalent of $35,000 in compensation. Mats Palming says there are many more people affected and that the number of claimants may well grow. The Danish government are yet to comment. But the case is part of an unravelling of the past, of the history between Greenland and Denmark. The Arctic island was a colony of Denmark, with its status changing several times during the 1900s, gaining more and more autonomy. It still has a close relationship with Denmark. The Danish king is its head of state, but it has its own government and parliament. During recent years, more and more information about what happened during the colonial period has come to light and brought what many in Greenland view as wrongdoings by the Danish state into the public domain. 2 years ago, the Danish Prime Minister issued a public apology and approved reparations to a group of Inuits that had been separated from their families in the 1950s, taken from Greenland to go to schools in Denmark in a push to increase education levels among Greenlanders. And earlier this year, a group of Greenlandic indigenous women sued the Danish state. They claim that they were unknowingly fitted with the contraceptive coil in the 1960s, when some of them were only in their teens, as part of a program created to control Greenland's birth rate and population growth.
Stephanie Zachrisson reporting. And still to come on the Global News podcast.
I did not know what I wanted to do, but I knew the kind of woman I wanted to be. I wanted to be a woman in charge. Yes, I wanted to have a man's life, but I still wanted to be a woman.
A new documentary about Diane von Furstenberg, designer of the wrap dress.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, during our lowest prices of the season, shop the Sleep Number smart bed starting at $999 for a limited time. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Greek police have arrested 13 people on suspicion of causing a wildfire on the island of Hydra. The blaze swept through a forested area near a beach, triggering public anger. Danny Eberhard reports.
Reports that the fire was caused either by fireworks or flares launched by people on a yacht have caused outrage in Greece. The country suffered horrendous deadly fires last summer, and the authorities have been warning of a very high risk of more. Indeed, some parts of Greece are already seeing them. Heat waves exacerbated by climate change are part of the problem, but so too is arson and negligence. In the Hydra case, members of the public have called for the yacht allegedly involved to be confiscated and those responsible jailed.
Danny Eberhard. The fire comes as the northern hemisphere continues to bake in temperatures that scientists say are made 35 times more likely by global warming. The heat has contributed to more than 1,000 deaths during the Hajj pilgrimage in Saudi Arabia. The US, Europe and Central America have also been suffering, as we can hear now from some of our correspondents, starting with Will Vernon in Washington.
A third of the country is under a hot weather advisory at the moment, over 100 million Americans. Several places had record-breaking temperatures on Friday. So that's the highest recorded temperature on the calendar day in question. For example, in Connecticut, it was 37 degrees Celsius. It was 46 degrees in Phoenix, Arizona. It feels a lot hotter than that. In New York City, a little further north from here, they're also braced for the heat there. The National Guard has been activated by the governor. City officials are warning people to prepare for potential blackouts, and that's because of the millions of air conditioning units, fans, that could overload the system. And the city has set up what's called cooling centres, where people can go and cool down in an air-conditioned area and have some water.
Will Vernon, next to our Balkans correspondent Guy Delaney in Slovenia.
We had a bit of a Mad Max moment on Friday across great parts of the Western Balkans, because at 12:30 in the afternoon local time, the power went out in Montenegro, Albania, the Dalmatian coast of Croatia and most of Bosnia for about an hour. The traffic was in complete chaos because there were no traffic lights. Some people were saying, I've got an oxygen supply which isn't working, can you come and find me? The electricity utilities are saying what happened was due to the heat, that there was an overload in the system caused by a combination of the high temperatures themselves and the high demand for electricity from people who want to operate, of course, air conditioning. That demand, that temperature, that was what caused, they think, this chaos yesterday.
Guy Delaney. And for the view from Egypt, here's Sally Nabil.
I've never, in my entire life, I've never seen a summer as hot as this one. It's reaching 45 and 46 degrees here. The government has already chopped down a huge number of trees over the past few years, trees that are more than 100 years old. You walk down a main street in Cairo, for example, and it just feels like a desert with no green area whatsoever. We are being warned that the temperatures will keep rising as we reach July and August. People are thinking what they are going to do and how they are going to handle that.
Sally Nabil in Cairo. So what impact are these increasingly regular heat waves having on governments and their policies on climate change? Caroline Wyatt discussed that question with Professor Rachel Kite, who served as advisor to the UN Secretary General on Climate Action, and to Miles Allen, Professor of Geosystems Science and Director of the Oxford Net Zero Initiative. First, to Miles Allen, are these higher temperatures definitely down to climate change?
Yeah, I mean, the fact that human-induced greenhouse gas emissions, I mean, like carbon dioxide from burning fossil fuels, increases the risk of these heat waves is very well established now. I mean, we first published a paper making this link 20 years ago. So, I mean, the science has really now moved on now. It's not just whether human influence on climate is making these heat waves worse, but how fast.
Rachel Kite, to what degree is this worrying governments now, making them take fresh action?
Well, it's an election year across the world, and this has not featured in the elections so far. Famously, India just went to the polls, and many Indians were dying in the line for the polls, but there was very little discussion around this. We are now seeing pilgrims dying as they go to Mecca. Again, very little sort of governmental response. So I think shock from the governments whose pilgrims are actually suffering. We don't see this as a feature of the election in the United States either. And around the world, this is not featuring at the national level. Where we are seeing action is at the city level. And we're starting to see unions and workers' organizations really starting to mobilize as they see the extreme sort of vulnerability of their members and of the people that they serve.
And Rachel, on that, I mean, does it worry you when you do see governments rowing back or slowing down their earlier commitments to reaching net zero?
Absolutely, because I think the heat has come earlier than people expected. I mean, for example, in the UK, the Climate Change Committee said at one point that they saw very little prospect of 40-degree heat before 2040. And of course, we had that in 2022. But then what's happening is that the Health Service Union, the fire brigades, the city leaders are sort of organising. And on Thursday of this week, Operation Helios will be a London-wide, an extreme heat exercise, which will then help London have an extreme heat plan. And I think city leaders, whether it's Anne Hidalgo, has to work out how to manage to keep people safe during the Olympics in Paris, or the mayor of London, or across the United States from Phoenix to Boston to Miami. It's at the city level that action's starting, and that's going to have to bubble up to the governmental level at some point.
Miles Allen, we've talked about governments, but is it your impression from conversations you've had that, that people, voters, the public, are now genuinely concerned by climate change and are ready to modify behaviour?
Well, I think people are genuinely concerned. I think the reason that I think it's so difficult for this to get through to people is they also get told that it's going to be incredibly difficult. And so people just feel overwhelmed and caught between a rock and a hard place. The fundamental problem is that we don't expect people to dispose of the carbon dioxide associated with the products they sell. Until we do that, we're not going to fix the problem. When we do, the problem will get fixed remarkably quickly.
And Rachel Kite, you mentioned elections. Is there a risk that governments will get so bogged down in day-to-day governance elections over the next year or so that it's very difficult to get minds to focus back on impacts lying perhaps a few years ahead?
We know from extreme heat that you lose productivity, right? So 20 to 25%, depending on how much shade you've got when it gets hot, and that's just going to go up as it gets hotter. So governments are going to have to focus on the loss of productivity. Then we know that it's a silent killer. We know that people are dying because of extreme heat. I think governments are going to be forced to really focus on the adaptation that we need to this extreme heat that comes from climate change, while we also fight the battles that Miles is talking about, which is the way in which we still subsidise the fossil fuel industry. Governments are just not going to have a choice.
Rachel Kite and Miles Allen talking to Caroline Wyatt. The fashion designer Diane von Furstenberg once described herself as living a man's life, but in high heels. The wrap dress she created became a phenomenon in the 1970s as women began to find their own style in the workplace. 50 years on, there's a new documentary about her on Disney Plus called Diane von Furstenberg, Woman in Charge. Our culture editor, Katie Razzell, went to meet the woman known as DVF and the Oscar-winning director of the film.
DVF.
Fashion tycoon.
The influencer.
Feminist icon.
I did not know what I wanted to do. But I knew the kind of woman I wanted to be. I wanted to be a woman in charge.
Diane von Furstenberg was a female pioneer in the male-dominated business world.
Yes, I wanted to have a man's life, but I still wanted to be a woman.
A Jewish immigrant to America who became a chat show regular.
Welcome the woman who reinvented the dress.
For the famous wrap dress she created in the early 1970s. It's a stretchy V-neck, wrapped and tied around the waist, that is both flattering and office-appropriate.
Jersey fabric molds your body, makes you look proper, but at the same time, sexy.
The documentary's director, Charmin Obaid-Shinoy, agrees.
The wrap dress came at a time when high fashion wasn't accessible to everyone. So many women found it liberating. You know, don't spend so much time on all of this. Spend more time doing the things that you love to do.
There's a darker story influencing Diane's life. In the Disney Plus documentary, she reads out the letter her mother hurriedly wrote on a piece of cardboard and threw from the shuttered wagon of the train that took her to Auschwitz.
Mamika et toi, mon petit papa. Votre petite Lily va partir.
She wasn't supposed to survive, and she did survive, and she married my father, and they told him, you cannot have a child. So my birth was a triumph. My mother used to say, you are my torch of freedom.
Alors, où qu'elle soit, jamais elle ne sera seule, ni malheureuse.
My mother would never allow me to be afraid. If I was afraid of the dark, she locks me in the dark closet. Today, she could be arrested for that. But as a result, she taught me that fear is not an option. And the other thing is, never be a victim.
Charmin Obaid-Shinoy is already a double Oscar winner for her documentaries about women's struggles in Pakistan. She's now moved into the superhero universe. After acclaimed episodes of the TV show Ms. Marvel...
I can't believe it, Bruno. I actually have powers.
I've never seen powers like that.
She is directing the next, and still secret, Star Wars movie.
I've always wanted to tell stories of heroes. In my case, it just so happens that the hero's journey is always a woman.
Is it just so happens, or are you deliberately choosing
well,
that?
I find my inspiration so much in the strength of women. I think that Diane's life is an anthem of freedom. And in the case of Star Wars, it's very much Daisy Ridley, but it's Daisy Ridley and so many of the characters that we're bringing back into the Star Wars universe and so many of the characters we're breathing new life into.
Diane von Furstenberg is a survivor who's overcome the threat of bankruptcy more than once and in the early 90s enlisted the help of the shopping channel QVC.
Silk Assets by Diane von Furstenberg.
I think that I identify very much with what a modern woman.
The documentary starts with an arresting scene. A makeup-free Diane climbing into her bathroom basin to do her face in the mirror.
Yeah.
She doesn't hide the fact she is 77.
Aging is living. So if you have aged, it's already in the bank.
But in an industry that has been obsessed, is obsessed with youth, well, what's your answer to how to fix that?
I have never been that way. And maybe it has to do with my mother. My birth was a triumph of life. So every day I have to honour life.
Diane von Furstenberg, creator of The Wrap Dress, talking to our culture editor, Katie Razzle. Finally to California and this year's competition to find the world's ugliest dog.
The world's ugliest dog is...
Well, Wild Thang had competed no fewer than five times before finally taking home the top prize. The Pekingese gets his unique look with his long tongue sticking out from a case of canine distemper, a disease preventing the growth of his teeth. One judge, Fiona Ma, said it was about time he emerged victorious.
Wild Thing was a fan favorite, and the fact that he had been competing for five times and only came in second is kind of like the bridesmaid and never the bride. I think, you know, really tugged at our heartstrings that, you know, he deserved to win. So.
In third place was a 14-year-old white-coated mixed-breed rescue dog called Daisy May. Despite the dog having lost her hair, teeth and vision, her owner, Elizabeth Whitehouse, was still surprised at the result.
I'm shocked. This was not my idea, it was my daughter's idea, and I didn't think she had a chance. I thought that she would be the most beautiful ugly dog, but as it turns out, other people don't see the beauty in her that I do.
Second place went to 14-year-old pug Rome, who's wheelchair-bound and received the online People's Choice Award. His owner, Michelle Grady, was delighted.
I love it. I love this whole contest. I love that it represents dogs that are imperfect, imperfectly perfect. Yeah, Rome is a... He had the best time. He really did. He had the best time.
Michelle Grady. And you can see pictures of all this year's winners on the BBC website. And that is all from us for now, but the Global News podcast will be back at the same time tomorrow. This edition was mixed by Chesney Fawkes-Porter for the last time because he's off soon. Thanks, Chesney. And it was produced by Alison Davis. Our editor's Karen Martin. I'm Oliver Conway. Until next time, goodbye.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Finance leaders, do your arms hurt? It's hard getting pulled in two different directions every day. Somehow you're supposed to cut costs and drive growth. Not easy, but it can be if you use Brex. Brex is the only corporate card and AI-powered spend platform that lets you control spend before it happens. Brex also automates busy work and gives you real-time visibility, so you have more time for strategic work. Ready to save and grow? Get Brex, the platform that helps you make every dollar count. Visit brex.com/grow.
Hey, I hear you think podcasts are all about true crime, huh? Well, wise guy, the iHeartRadio app's got all kinds of podcasts. We got stuff you should know and stuff they don't want you to know. We got Bobby Bones, Big Boy, and Lou Later. We got SpongeBob Binge Pants and Exotic Erotic Storytime. We got Doughboys, Two Dudes in a Kitchen, Green Eggs and Dan. Hey, we got ElfQuest. We got podcasts for everything on the iHeartRadio app for free. If you don't download that, well,
That's not just a true crime, my friend. That's criminal.